Thanks for joining me for another All About Jack and C.S. Lewis podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, your host. The show today is the second and final part that explores a set of books that is often overlooked called C.S. Lewis, Life, Works, and Legacy. This semi-encyclopedia came out back in 2007 and was edited by Dr. Bruce Edwards. Last time, besides giving us a grand overview of the volumes, the focus was on the first two. This time, as you might expect, Dr. Edwards addresses questions related mostly to the third and fourth books. If you missed the first part, be sure to check the show notes to get a direct link. This can be found at EssentialCSLewis.com. There you can also find other resources about C.S. Lewis, as well as previous podcasts. Well, welcome back to the show, Bruce.
Good to be back.
At the end, I'll have you review some of the details about the first two volumes. As noted in my introduction, we're focusing on the third and fourth volume, so let's kick off by having you give a grand overview of each of them.
The final two volumes in the series, Volume 3 and Volume 4, are just as filled with terrific essays and insights, and have the added bonus, I think, of presenting new scholars, younger scholars even, to the worldwide audience of C.S. Lewis. And I would also add that these are international scholars as well, which I think gives added impact to the value of the work. But Volume 3 is the volume that's focusing on Lewis as apologist, philosopher, and theologian. And, you know, in some ways, those are disputable terms. Although Lewis had academic work and certainly had published work as an apologist, a philosopher, and a theologian, he would not have wanted to be credited with those vocations. He loved the Bible. He loved the defense of the Christian faith, and he certainly loved good philosophy. But he was not what he considered to be a professional at those things. And, you know, a lot of writers today who write about Lewis seem to go out of their way to point out, oh, but Lewis wasn't, you know, professional in any of these areas. And, of course, my attitude is always, but he is so much better than the people who do it professionally. Why wouldn't I want to also hear from him? And I think that's the attitude and the premise with which each of the contributors to this volume work. It's not that they are, you know, leaving professional credentials behind, and it's not important, but that Lewis is able to provide insight into those arenas of thought and debate. And I think these essays do a great job of presenting Lewis for the value and the insight he does have to the topics of apologetics, philosophy, and theology. And, you know, we've got some preeminent participants here. You know, Victor Reppert, who teaches philosophy in Arizona, is, you know, considered, I think, one of the great expositors of Lewis currently. And I was happy to be able to get Victor to write on the book Miracles, Lewis's book, which is, of course, very controversial because there are a lot of commentators who assume a lot about Lewis's so-called defeat and his desire to edit Miracles as a result. And I think, again, here's a place where Victor Reppert has a very calm, deliberate way of explaining what has happened in Lewis's sort of philosophical career and how that played out. So I think that's a very valuable, just to cite one example. Now, Volume 4 is sort of the summing up kind of volume, the legacy volume, the, you know, what are we to make of Lewis and his continued impact on not only British and American culture, but, you know, increasingly around the world in places you would not expect, from Russia to Brazil to Japan to China. You know, as his renown and his influence grows, we're going to want to have testimony and critique from around the world. And so I'm glad to say that in this particular volume, we have Marta Garcia de la Puerta commenting about the Inklings abroad, and she's writing from Spain, but she provides us with a terrific overview of how Lewis is received and become a prominent spokesperson in these atypical countries. For enjoying and spreading the word about Lewis's work, so this is a volume that gives us a chance to reflect on not only what Lewis was in his time, but how he continues to be an important critic and thinker for the 21st century.
Well, let's go ahead and then break down some of what you were sharing about these third and fourth volume. Taking, of course, logically, the third volume. This addresses, as you already noted, Lewis as apologist, philosopher, and theologian. Again, very logical in terms of the grouping, but let's take a moment and have you kind of tease out the differences between those and why Lewis can be considered as well-versed in these areas as he is.
Well, of course, as Lewis was educated at Oxford, and as he was educated, I might say, by his friends like Owen Barfield, J.R.R. Tolkien, Charles Williams, he has a polymathic, a multiple set of competencies that involve subject matter as well as the kind of reasoning and mythopoeic thinking that he's most famous for. By that I mean, Lewis is as comfortable in the defense of the Christian faith as he is in defending the logical syllogisms of Aristotle, and he's as adept at defending the theology of the Bible and the theology of the church because he has spent his lifetime embedding himself in the traditions and the works of these. He's better read in multiple disciplines than most people who occupy those disciplines, and certainly I think it's true in apologetics, it's true in philosophy, and it's true in theology. And it's always been remarkable to me to reflect upon the fact that the BBC, found it important to elect or appoint, if you will, Lewis to be a spokesperson for Christianity during wartime, when there were plenty of so-called theologians or professional philosophers who might have played that role. But Lewis was seen as eloquent, logical, a master of metaphor, and the ability to speak to the so-called common man. And so I think all of the essays in this volume speak to that, both Lewis's genius in these sort of public spaces of apologetics, philosophy, and theology, but also he's a genius at communicating. And almost every one of the essays in this particular volume speak to that, and I think provide terrific insight into what makes Lewis a master preacher, as well as a kind of master rhetorician. And I think, again, we have such important representation here of people like Wayne Martindale, who talks about the apologetic impulse of the Great Divorce. We've got Greg Anderson, who is a tremendous pastor and also gifted rhetorician, who pastors a church in Hong Kong, writing on both the sermons of C.S. Lewis, but also his rhetorical process of finding arguments as well as establishing the basis for proving things, or at least the logical quality of things that normally we think of, well, that's just a matter of faith. Well, true, but Lewis has a way also of embedding these important theological constructs in everyday rhetoric and everyday writing context that you know provides such a tremendous advantage to him when he is speaking to these professional audiences of his time and ours.
Well, now you brought up one of the areas that I did want to have you elaborate on here, and that is in regards to Lewis as a preacher. The fourth chapter in this third volume is from Dr. Greg Anderson, as you mentioned. It deals with the sermons of C.S. Lewis. Many people maybe aren't aware of the essay versions of Lewis's sermons, and so what are some of the things here that we learned from Dr. Anderson?
Well, of course, a majority of those works are collected in The Weight of Glory, and you know, most of those are sermons and started as sort of learned essays preached as sermons in real churches. And what Greg does is give you an original context for where these were preached, who the audience was, what were the sort of highlights or important functions going on in the sermons. And so, for instance, Weight of Glory is considered. And some of the most important of Lewis's works are considered Learning in Wartime, Transposition. You know, all of these important sermons and you might say orations are covered in this chapter. And again, at the time, even though there have been other volumes since, Greg was doing original scholarship, and it still stands as being very valuable to anybody who wants to understand who was Lewis as a preacher, where did he learn how to do this? And of course, the answer is he learned it by growing up with the great Knock as one of his educators, but also the Oxford environment, and particularly the environment of the Inklings, who each shaped each other's discourse in ways that I think we're still finding out how important it was to share in a group setting. And I think Lewis learns many things from those days, and I think each of the essays covered in this particular volume, you know, give us some relationship on this order that we find out not only what did Lewis do and why was he successful at it, but also how did he learn how to do this when he didn't attend seminary, let's say, or he didn't grow up really as a believer in the life of the church because of all the things we know about Lewis's early life and later life. And so there's you know, important component of Lewis's biography that Greg gets to cover by looking at Lewis as preacher. And, you know, it's really an excellent chapter in this particular encyclopedia.
It definitely is. It's one of the ones that I found fascinating myself in terms of just wanting to learn more, being familiar with the various essay versions of these that were originally sermons, and like in considering, you know, the further details about it that he does provide in this chapter. Well, now, another individual you mentioned I wanted to also ask about, Dr. Victor Ruppert. He wrote a couple chapters in this third volume. Remind again about him and then share some of the details about what he covers.
There are two chapters by Victor, and you know, when I ask a contributor to write more than one essay, it was usually because they had the best handle on two aspects. One is a book that Lewis might have written. In that case, you know, this is the book Miracles, and also would have insight into Lewis as a thinker and performer in that discipline. And so what Victor provides from his point of view as a professional philosopher, he gives us insight into Lewis as an apologist and defender of the faith. So he has a chapter called The Ecumenical Apologist, which sets the stage for, you know, how Lewis was prepared to do this. You know, what is his educational background, but what is his sort of his spiritual development that provides the insight into Lewis as apologist. And then he does write the chapter on the book Miracles, which again, I think sheds light on the famous Anscombe debate the Oxford philosopher, who was also a believer and a Christian, who allegedly defeated Lewis and ended his apologetic career, which I think a majority of people who've looked into that these days, you know, don't believe that's what occurred, that it was two colleagues having an honest debate in which one provided insight into how to improve an argument, another of the maid, and Victor does a terrific job, you know, as he did in his book about this, of explaining the circumstances of the Socratic Club and how those things were handled and what Lewis was able to recover from to move forward. And I think that's the chief and most important value, I think, of his contribution to the volume as a whole, is understanding Lewis as an apologist and understanding how miracles is set up to be a convincing argument on behalf of miracles with an assist from Anscombe.
Well, as we did in the previous program, I'll let you do what I'm going to call potluck time. That is, pick one or two other chapters from this third volume, and what stands out to you about them?
Clearly, there's important work here on the origins and impact of Mere Christianity by Joel Heck. He does a terrific job of outlining the original schedule for Lewis, how it worked at the BBC, and all sorts of interesting details about that amazing performance that Lewis gives over many weeks, and just provides insight into what it was like for Lewis, who, you know, had to get on a train, not one of his most favorite things, to really participate in this tremendous ministry opportunity to the people of Britain during the wartime. So that's a very valuable chapter. The other chapter in this volume I would want to identify for special merit and importance is the one by Marjorie Lamp Mead, which focuses on a posthumously published work of Lewis's, the Letters to Malcolm, chiefly on prayer. And it's a very important work because it what you might call the last and most important things Lewis was resting on, the most important theological concepts, the most important biblical encouragements. And Marjorie does a terrific job of identifying those themes and linking them to earlier themes of Lewis and how they have continued over time to be very important to Lewis. I know she had done a public presentation in the spring of 2014 on this very subject. And, this is one of those essays where you invite someone to write about this, and no restrictions, able to write whatever she is on her heart to say. And this is a terrific, eloquent tribute both to Lewis and I think into Marjorie's vast knowledge of the Lewis canon, and it's all brought together here.
Well, now the fourth and final volume for the C.S. Lewis Life, Works, and Legacy, the subtitle is Scholar, Teacher, and Public Intellect. Let's have you explore the one of the titles that casual Lewis readers are least likely to have read. Dr. Don Williams discusses English literature in the 16th century. Why him, and then what are a few of the important aspects that the reader can learn from this chapter?
Well, Don is another of those essayists who provided two essays. The earlier one, it was in volume 3 on Reflections on the Psalms. And in this particular chapter, Don takes on a very, very thick volume. And what he does is magical, because he takes a very scholarly work, a very thick volume about the 16th century, and doesn't exactly condense it, because there's still a lot to say about this volume that he wasn't going to be able to say in our volume. But he makes it accessible. He lets the reader who would not normally ever, unless they want to be a completist, I've read everything of Lewis, and so I'm going to make it through English literature in the 16th century. But Donne does a masterful treatment of major themes, important quotations from Lewis, accurately portrayed, I might say, for those who are worried about Lewis being quoted, with authenticity. And what he does most importantly is he shows why Lewis is, as his bibliographer and biographer Walter Hooper said, he's the most thoroughly converted man I ever met. Because Lewis is the same, whatever he's writing about, whatever volume he's working on, he's bringing biblical insight, Christian insight into the sort of cultural landscape. In this case, he's focused on 16th century literature, but you learn from Lewis about his faith and about your own faith page by page. And Donne helps us along the way by providing the spotlight on important matters as you move through that volume. And I knew that would be something Donne would be able to do. If Donne hadn't done it, that would have meant I would have had to do it. And I was willing and certainly excited about it. But this would have come near the end of the editorial process. And that would have knocked me for a loop. And so I was very glad that Donne took on this task. Which it's right up his alley in terms of preparation and focus.
The third chapter in this fourth volume is the letters of C.S. Lewis. Those unnamed casual readers are also not likely to know that Lewis did write quite a few letters. So tell me about this article.
Well, Michael Travers is also a gifted theologian. He's taught both in departments of English. He's taught in seminary settings. And I knew that Michael would have insight into Lewis as correspondent, Lewis as eloquent spokesperson to the common person, because the majority of the letters weren't written to the Inklings, weren't only written to Arthur Greaves, but they were written to common folk who wrote him to ask him a personal question. It might have been a question posed from a answer to a relationship issue. It might have been a question about the Bible. It might have been just a question about how do I persevere in my faith. And what Michael does is selectively, because again, Lewis's three volumes of letters that we have, and even if you've got a kind of abridged version in a volume that's designed to highlight and sample various issues of Lewis, he writes about lots and lots of different things. And so what Michael's chapter does is he kind of surveys maybe not the typical, but the variety of things Lewis wanted to write about, to whom he wrote. There are a number of people Lewis writes consistently over time, and they're often collected. He wrote to children, and Michael just brings insight into the people to whom Lewis wrote, maybe some thinking out loud about why he chose certain people to write. But we kind of know Lewis wrote back to everybody. And if all the letters were possible to be collected that he wrote, we probably would have 7 or 8 volumes at this point.
Editor's Choice, select one or two other entries and why people should know more about this aspect of Lewis.
Well, this is a volume and where people are given the liberty to write about the continuing impact and legacy of Lewis, maybe through the point of view of a certain text, but not only that text. And so just about everybody who writes in this volume is trying to do that. So for instance, a former student of mine who is a great scholar of Lewis and Christian education, Scott Calhoun, writes about the Studies in Words volume that Lewis wrote. Again, that's kind of a volume that might sound boring or off-putting, Studies in Words, what's that going to be about? But again, what Scott does is enliven Lewis's prose by pointing out what he's attempting to do and sort of sampling it for us. So, you know, what among the other things that Lewis is doing in that volume is he's looking at the history of words and their impact in culture and time. And of course, this is something he's learned to do and learned to value from his friend Owen Barfield. And so this chapter not only illuminates what Lewis is doing in studies and words, but he also, Scott helps to help us understand why the relationship with Owen Barfield is so important to Lewis and why this is worth reading at some point in one's pursuit of Lewis.
Are there any interesting behind-the-scenes stories about the creation of this book you are at liberty to share?
Well, putting together a volume of this diversity and of many different kinds of writers, not only what they are kind of professionally charged with doing in their day-to-day careers, as well as where they're from and the accessibility I might have to them if I needed to call them or follow up on an editorial question. And so that was always a challenge for anybody who was not working in North America, obviously. And I needed to be able, in some cases, you know, check up on the progress of a particular writer and so forth. You know, not very often, but, you know, when we got to crunch time, when the book was going to press and I needed to check on the spelling of something, or I needed to know which of the volumes of Lewis they intended because it's ambiguous, you know, that becomes a crucial time concern. I also had the privilege of including an essay by my son, Michael, who wrote a terrific essay on Lewis's reading and criticism and how he was a tutor for his Oxford students. And that was a joyful thing for me to invite Michael to contribute and to see him do a terrific job with great scholarly expertise in involving research as well as his own expanding knowledge and love of Lewis. And so I enjoyed including him in the volume. You know, Diana Glyer offered me all sorts of encouragement along the way and provided this fourth volume edition called C.S. Lewis Scholarship, A Bibliographical Overview, in which she with a colleague, David Bratman, put together, again, a very solid bibliography of secondary sources. And she continues to update it on her website. But it was valuable to have a snapshot in 2007, which has annotations about what is the most valuable treatment of this or that subject related to Lewis, that you could recommend. And, you know, to me, that makes the value of the volume, live on beyond, its 2007 copyright date. And I would hasten to say that, again, without any false modesty, because it's the work of the people who contribute to it, nothing has come along to surpass the collective scholarship represented in this set of volumes. And so I'm very proud to continue to recommend it. And who knows, in the future, the availability and price, you know, electronic accessibility in particular, may make this suitable for just about anybody to have in their library. And I think it won't be dated by the time that happens. I think that time is coming very quickly now, when almost everything by Lewis and about Lewis is pretty much going to be available electronically at some cost that is manageable and reasonable to the people who really want to study Lewis.
Well, and this has been a good time that I've had to chat with you. There are a lot of things that we could have elaborated on, but decided ahead of time to keep this to just two podcasts. It's our time now has come for the final question here, and that is, we want to give you an opportunity for those, especially who maybe haven't heard the first program, though there will be a link in the show notes for them to go back and listen to that. But first, go ahead And what was covered in that first episode, highlighting those first two volumes, what they address. And then the final encouragement to kind of summarize why everyone should maybe get a loan to get a copy, or to, as you mentioned last time, encourage their local library or school library if they're still in school to get a copy.
All right. Thank you for that opportunity. The first two volumes cover the sort of life of Lewis from lots of different perspectives, the friendships he had, and we have some of the absolute best commentators on that subject, people who have contributed whole biographies since 2007. And I think it's important volume. It sets the stage for everything that happens in the four-volume set. And the second one begins to focus on Lewis as an imaginative writer. So his fantasy, his science fiction, his mythopoeic writing, such as Till We Have Faces, and really, I think, does a thorough and terrific job of not just introducing the person interested in Lewis, but goes quite into depth about the origins and the reception of these works, both originally and continuing on into the present. So I think it's a nice four-volume treatment of all the things you've ever wanted to know more about, and anything that's not in there, let's think about coming out with volumes 5 and 6 at some point, and we can cover that ground. As William has said, this was an encyclopedia set that was designed primarily to serve as reference material in schools and local libraries. And so it's priced at a premium rate. And I think the last time I checked, it was $300 for this four-volume set. And that's beyond the capability of a majority of people who would love to have these volumes. But you can find it available from the usual sources, and I always just recommend Amazon, because they keep it available and in stock, so to speak. You know, it is available as an electronic text, but only directly from the publisher, which is Prager Perspectives. And you can find that undoubtedly in William's show notes, but you can also find it if you search online. So I encourage anyone who wants to partake of the riches of these four volumes to see if your local library has it, or particularly if you're close to a university town. And if not, you can always suggest it. Librarians are always looking for suggestions for purchase. And, you may find that the most convenient way to get to see these four volumes.
Well, Bruce, as last time, it's very enjoyed an opportunity to help people learn more about these four volume sets. I've enjoyed the material myself, and hope people can do encourage their library or to find a way. The electronic copy, I'm not positive. We will have a link in the show notes, whether that was priced more reasonably for an individual or not, but people can check those details out as well. But so, Bruce, again, thanks for being with me on the show.
Always a pleasure to be with you, William.
I'm William O'Flaherty, and I hope, as the listener, you've enjoyed this second and final chat about C.S. Lewis, Life, Works, and Legacy with Dr. Bruce Edwards. When you explore learning about getting a copy of the set, be aware that Amazon frequently has used copies of books for sale at a substantially reduced price. You can also check the show notes for a direct link to finding the latest pricing for new or used versions. Also, the show notes is a great place to find a link to listen to the first show if you haven't already, and links to other shows I've had with Bruce as a guest, as well as some of the people involved in the third and fourth volume that he mentioned during the show. Plus, I've included a link to C.S. Lewis Review, a website that Bruce has. Visit either EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com to find the show notes. The latter is where I have the audio files hosted, and it might be easier to browse past shows. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with others. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online at EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. There you can also find previous shows where I typically do author interviews. Also, from time to time, I do more than one show on special topics. That includes an occasional series of essay chats, a two-part discussion on The Hobbit, the book versus the movies, earlier in 2015, and then last year, I did a four-part series on C.S. Lewis and women with Dr. Crystal Hurd. You can hear those again by going to EssentialCSLewis.com or AllaboutJack.podbean.com. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, that's info, I-N-F-O, @EssentialCSLewis.com.